Thank you for all being here today. And thanks to those who have taken a weekend or a significant part of a weekend to join us. Zazen Kai and weekend Sesshin are an opportunity to return to silence. This is especially important in the Shilla Ango, when the regular sitting schedule is cut back, and for the most part, we turn outward to find our practice in the world of day-to-day activity. So this weekend, we return for a while to our root, our anchor in Zazen. It is only when we go into the world through and from our Zazen that we manifest the Bodhisattva. All the stories and the sayings and doings of the masters that we read and study as koans are founded in Zazen. The eccentric behavior and cryptic words that may seem incomprehensible come out of Zazen. And it is through our own Zazen that these stories and examples become transparent. Today we'll look at a koan, a case from the Hekigan Roku, or Blue Cliff Record. Sun Sheng's golden fish who has passed through the net. The Blue Cliff Record is the second of the classical koan collections that we work with in our curriculum here. The first one is the Mumen Kan, or Wu Men Guan in Chinese. This is followed by the Blue Cliff Record, the Shoya Roku, the Book of Serenity, and then the Denko Roku, the Transmission of the Light. The Blue Cliff Record was originally compiled by Zen Master Xue To around the 10th century of the Common Era, which is to say during the Song Dynasty in China. It consists of 100 cases, based, as most koans are, on the sayings and doings of the great Chan masters of the earlier Tang Dynasty. Xue To included a very few comments and a verse to go with each case. Some 60 years later, his disciple and successor, Master Yuan Wu, gave a series of taisho on the cases in which he added line-by-line comments and voluminous commentary on each case, as well as a separate commentary on Xue To's verses, and even added some verses of his own. The result is a huge volume, translated by the Cleary brothers, that is great fun to snoop around in. Today, however, we'll look just at the main case and part of Xue To's verse. Case number 49 in the Blue Cliff Record. Sun Cheng's golden fish who has passed through the net. The case reads, Sun Cheng asked Xue Feng, I wonder, what does the golden fish who has passed through the net use for food? Feng said, when you come out of the net, I'll tell you. Shang said, the teacher of 1,500 people and you don't even know what to say. Feng said, my affairs as abbot are many and complicated. Xue To's verse. The golden fish who has passed through the net. Stop saying he tarries in the water. He shakes the heavens and sweeps the earth. He flourishes his mane and sweeps his tail. When a 1,000-foot whale spouts, vast waves fly. At a single thunderclap, the pure wind gusts. The pure wind gusts. Among gods and humans, how many know? How many? Our two protagonists here are Xuefeng and Sancheng. Xuefeng, that's Seppo in Japanese, his dates are 822 to 908 of the Common Era, is well known as one of the great successors of Taishan, that's Toksan. Those who have worked on the koans involving Xuefeng, particularly case number 13 and the Wu Men Quan, and related commentaries, will recall that Xuefeng was one of those masters who, unlike his friend and mentor, Yen To, was not what you would call a natural. Practice and realization did not come easily to him, and he struggled for many years under several different teachers and well into middle age, until one day, with the help of Yen To, he came to deep awakening while staying at a snowbound inn in a small village. And yet, when Xuefeng finally settled down at Elephant Bone Monastery, he became one of the most eminent and prolific teachers of his day, training over 50 enlightened successors. It's a prodigious number. There's a Chan proverb that says, "A superior vessel takes a long time to complete." There's a humorous story about the aspiring young artist who goes to a famous painter and begs him to teach him how to draw. The older artist looks at him as if he were crazy and says, "What's to teach? You just draw what you see." Ted Williams was perhaps the greatest natural talent ever to play the game of baseball. Yet by his own admission, he was a failure as a manager. Everything came to him so easily that he simply could not relate to young players who were struggling with some aspect of the game. Sometimes the natural genius does not make the most effective teacher. It is the one who has struggled and fallen into all the traps who is the best guide. Our other protagonist here is Sancheng. That's Sancho in Japanese. Sancheng is no wandering monk looking for points on his resume. He is a Dharma heir of the great Lin Chi, Rinzai, one of our most direct ancestors. We don't know a great deal about him, but he is most likely a younger contemporary of Xuefeng and a highly respected master in his own right. He is the main compiler of the Rinzai Roku, the record of Lin Chi. At this stage in his career, he is traveling about, visiting various masters in order to continue to refine his understanding. This was common among Zen practitioners after they had completed their formal training. So Sancheng is a visitor, but a well-known one, and a respected guest. And this exchange is between equals, although it may not seem so. It is one of those wonderful Dharma dances in which each participant plays his role to the hilt. If I were a playwright or a director and were adding stage directions to this exchange, it might go something like this. It is evening at Elephant Bone Monastery. The master, Xuefeng, ascends the high seat before the great assembly of monks and possibly some visiting lay people from nearby towns. He gives a short teisho and then asks anyone who wishes to step forth and demonstrate their understanding. San Chen, as a visiting master, is given the courtesy of asking the first question. He rises from his seat, walks to the front of the hall with a slight swagger, a grin on his face and the devil in his eye. He bows and in a loud voice proclaims, "I wonder, what does the golden fish who has passed through the net use for food?" There are murmurs in the audience and some smiles. This is going to be good. The master is silent for a moment, letting the crowd digest this huge statement. Then, with a slight smile on his face and a twinkle in his eye, he replies, "When you come out of the net, I'll tell you." Gasps from the crowd. Score one for the old boss. Sun Ching turns to face the audience and, throwing his arms wide, bellows theatrically, "The teacher of 1,500 people, and you don't even know what to say." The audience roars with laughter. The master remains silent, waiting for the noise to die down, and then very quietly says, "My affairs as abbot are many and complicated." There is complete silence. San Sheng makes a deep bow and withdraws. San Sheng is not afraid to take the role of guest here. He has no concern with notions of winning or losing. As long as the Dharma is upheld and the point is made, it doesn't matter. There's a koan taken from Zhaozhou's, that's Zhoushu's, years of travel, in which he also is perfectly willing to play the buffoon simply to bring out the truth. In case number 41 in the Hekigan Roku, Zhaozhou asked Tozu, "How is it when a man who has died the great death returns to life?" Tozu said, "He must not go by night. He must get there in daylight." Notice the similar bombastic nature of the question. Xue Feng Tu accepts his role as host, and together they dance the dance. Remarkable. What does the golden fish who has passed through the net use for food? Passed through the net. An enviable condition. Completely free and unfettered. But free of what? Is there something to be free of? What kind of freedom are we talking about here? When we speak of freedom, all too often we are thinking of personal freedom, the freedom of the ego to do whatever it wants. I'm sure we would all like that kind of freedom, the freedom to travel, to enjoy the beaches of the South Pacific, to see Venice or Vegas, depending on inclination, mix with the rich and famous. Spend time in the garden, reading, practicing music or art. Or perhaps we aspire to some ideal of spiritual freedom, the freedom to do more zazen, go to sesshin. We entertain images of endless tranquility in which nothing disturbs us, nothing upsets us, no mental turmoil or trouble. But those kinds of freedom are utterly dependent on circumstances, i.e. money, leisure time, favorable psychological conditions, and so forth. Is that really freedom? Or is it the basest sort of slavery? What is real freedom? Emancipation. what freedom is truly independent of circumstances? If we put it that way, there is none. We all desire enlightenment, emancipation. That's why we're here, isn't it? What is this enlightenment? Is anybody here enlightened? If not, then how do you know what it is? And if you don't know what it is, why are you chasing after it? Zhao Zhou asked Nan Chuan, how do I direct myself towards it? Nan Chuan said, if you direct yourself, you betray your practice. Rather put it another way. What freedom is in complete accord with circumstances? Freedom is the circumstances of our lives. Real freedom is the freedom of our inherent Buddha nature. That is the freedom of everything, of everything, to be as it is, to function as it does. The net itself, properly seen, is our freedom. Upon seeing the morning star, the Buddha said, I and all sentient beings of the great earth have in the same moment attained the way. That is, when the Buddha attained liberation, all beings at the same time attained liberation. He didn't go off separately by himself. We are like that. We are liberated only as we liberate all beings. The freedom of each of us depends on the freedom of all sentient beings. It's a package deal. No exceptions allowed. How do we liberate all beings? It's a heavy responsibility. When Dogen, actually his teacher, Ju Qing, speaks of the dropping away of body and mind, he is not just referring to your body and mind or my body and mind in the individualistic sense. The dropping away is of all concepts, thoughts, notions of bodies and minds of all beings. When we really give ourselves up to our zazen, we liberate all beings with each breath, with each mu, with each one. Beings are no other than thoughts of beings. When thoughts, notions, and concepts drop away, all beings drop away. When all beings drop away, the self drops away. That's liberation. Beyond formal zazen, however, it's the same. Walking is zen, sitting is zen. Whether active or quiet, the essence is at peace, says Yongcha. If we live that way in complete absorption in and accord with that which is, we liberate all beings in every moment. When we accept our lives completely as they are and as they function and accord wholeheartedly with what is, we liberate ourselves and all beings. But this is not something that happens once and voila, we're enlightened. It's a continuous process. Not too long ago, I heard a revivalist preacher on the radio who kept saying, saving the soul is a continuous process. And I thought, wow, this guy's onto something. Dogen said, no trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Practice, enlightenment, continue always and forever. The net, the circumstances of our lives, is only the concept of a net. Our mistake is when we make distinctions between that which is here and now and what we aspire to in our lives, our careers, or in our practice. To say I have passed through the net, to even consider enlightenment as opposed to ignorance, is already to be caught up in dualistic notions of freedom, slavery, ignorance, enlightenment, relative, absolute, transcendent, mundane. This violates the 10th precept, not to defame the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, but to cherish and uphold them. Bodhidharma's comment tells us why. The self-nature is inconceivably wondrous, and the realm of the one, not making distinctions between Buddhas and ordinary beings, is called the principle of not defaming the three treasures. When you come out of the net, I'll tell you. When you come out of the net, when will that be? When you no longer entertain all those concepts about nets, when it is of no import whether you are here or there, ignorant or enlightened, when that question of nets and passing through no longer needs to be asked. Yuan Wu's comments on San Cheng's questions says, the golden fish is free in all ways. This question is too lofty. You must just know for yourself. Then what need is there to ask any further? What's interesting to me is that there is another translation of this koan in which Xue Feng, in answer to San Cheng's challenge, says, I shall tell you if you bring me a net. Yes, show me this net that you say you have passed through. Is this familiar? Case number 41 in the Wu Men Quan. Bodhidharma faced the wall. The second ancestor stood in the snow, cut off his arm and said, your disciple's mind is not at peace yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest. Bodhidharma said, bring me your mind, and I will put it to rest. The second ancestor said, I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it. Bodhidharma said, I have completely put it to rest for you. Transmission number 30 in the Denko Roku. The 30th ancestor, China's third ancestor, Seng Zan, went to see the 29th ancestor and said, your disciple is suffering from a fatal sickness. I beg your reverence, please release me from my sins. The ancestor said, bring me your sins, and I will release them for you. The master sat still for a while and then said, I cannot find my sins in spite of all my efforts. The ancestor said, I have already released your sins for you. Bring me your mind. Bring me your sins. Bring me a net. In scientific investigation, the way you try to disprove something utterly is to behave as if it were absolutely true. Alan Watts gives the example, if you have a friend who insists that the world is flat, you say, okay, let's go for a walk and find the edge. Wouldn't that be fun? And you walk and you walk until one day you find yourself back where you started. And your friend would have to admit that the world is at least a cylinder. So you say you have this net, this mind, these sins. Great. Bring them out. Let's have a look. Oh, you can't find them? Gee, what does that tell you? We all feel trapped from time to time in our own lives. We long for some kind of escape. But look for that trap. Look at it carefully. Can you show yourself a trap, a net? Can you show it to someone else? I noticed a book title a couple of days ago, After Enlightenment Comes the Laundry. But no, the laundry doesn't come after enlightenment. The laundry is the enlightenment. So is changing a flat tire, carpooling the kids to soccer, dealing with a fender bender. All the trivia of daily life, except it isn't trivia. Every moment is an invitation to practice, to realize, to pass through the net. What does the fish use for food? Every moment of our everyday lives. As for Sun Cheng's rejoinder, the teacher of 1,500 people and you don't even know what to say. Well, take it for what it's worth. Wan Wu's comment is, the crashing noise of sudden thunder really startles the crowd. Let him leap about. That's okay. Leaping about is not a bad thing. Sun Cheng plays his part, moving the drama along. My affairs as abbot are many and complicated. Yuan Wu says, this statement is most poisonous. My job as teacher, electrician, physician, parent, house cleaner, caregiver, cook, office worker, has its ups and downs. It's okay. This is the net. This is passing through the net. Jung Cha says, the real nature of ignorance is the Buddha nature itself. The empty Duyasuri body is this very body of the Dharma. No matter how deep our samadhi, no matter how exalted a spiritual condition we may reach in a sitting or in a sesshin, we always come back to this very dilatory body, the laundry, the flat tire, the tax forms, the Broncos losing in the playoffs. So what then? We can't live our lives, our enlightenment, from sesshin to sesshin. The empty dilatory body is the very body of the Dharma. So what net is there to worry about? Just what is there to escape from? There is no net, and there never has been. From the beginning, delusion and ignorance do not enter. And yet, here we sit, working like demons, facing our demons. Why? Xue Dou tells us in the first two lines of his verse, the golden fish who has passed through the net, stop saying he tarries in the water. No, we may not stop anywhere. Time and again, when a student gets it, the master immediately swats him one. Keep moving. You aren't there yet. No, we aren't there yet, and we never will be. Don't stop. Don't give up. Enlightenment is not a condition. It's not a place. There's no hangout. Enlightenment is who we are moment by moment. Our practice is our enlightenment. Our enlightenment is our practice. On or off the mat. To practice is to be enlightened. To cease practice is to cease enlightenment. When questioning Mu, don't get hung up on answers. Answers will bring you to a halt. Practice with a questioning mind, not the questing mind that chases after things. Be comfortable with the question that does not seek answers. Be comfortable with not being comfortable. Shui Do's last lines. At a single thunderclap, the pure wind gusts. The pure wind gusts among gods and humans. How many know? How many? In case number 6 in Zen Master Raven, Raven asks Brown Bear Roshi, what is the role of character in my practice, in the practice? Brown Bear said, I try to keep my promises. Raven said, I try to keep my promises too, but I'm easily distracted. Brown Bear said, the cold wind reminds me. The pure wind gusts. The cold wind reminds me. Sounds of the traffic, the aching in the joints, the pain between the shoulders. Of what do they remind us? Every moment, the universe proclaims, I am. But how many know? How many hear it? How many really hear it? Together with all beings, we attain Buddhahood.